Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, welcome back to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim, Ed, and Steve Paisley-Jordahl joins us in studio. Good morning, Steve.
Hello, everybody.
Ray Pritchard's in Kansas City.
Hey.
So you got the Paisley going on today.
Yes, sir.
Fit your name.
Got a little blue Paisley going on.
Fits the name that you gave him.
I gave him. I've tagged him with that.
And I'll take it.
Steve, I've tagged Steve.
At least he's not a bird brain. We know that.
It's true.
He's a smart guy.
Steve, I was asking Kirk Cameron last hour. He was on with us. He lived in California, I think a native Californian,
yeah,
for a long, and he just recently moved to Tennessee, he said, out in the country where he has no good phone cell connection,
yeah,
to do an interview with us. I was asking him, I'll ask you, you're a native Californian. I know you haven't lived there in a long time, but why are so many companies and, I guess, people exiting California?
Companies are exiting California because it is just a very harsh landscape for businesses. The taxes are so high. California has a lot of anti-growth measures. So if you start a company or bring a company to California, you're going to have a hard time finding housing for your people. It's almost unaffordable. Conservatives are leaving California because the politics are so
hostile.
Yeah, that's why my sister and father and mom and dad left 3 years ago. And a lot of people going to Tennessee, to Nashville. That's where they moved. So
that's a good explanation, Steve. I mean, that makes sense. There's both of those things going on.
So
they're at the same time.
So a lot of people who are conservatives are moving out. Businesses are moving out. That seems to me of course, they're in the minority anyway, but it seems to me, Ray, that's going to worsen things politically in California.
Well, it's just going to solidify the hold that the radical far left has on California. Oh, Tim, we could use another Ronald Reagan. We could use him, but where's he going to come from?
Can you really Ronald Reagan was a two-time governor of California.
California.
Yeah.
It was a reliably Republican state.
It was a great state back in my youth.
In the era?
When I was in high school.
40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 60s.
Yeah.
Right in there?
All of those.
Well, and
I wasn't around in the 40s and 50s and barely in the 60s. I mean, I was.
Yeah, it's just hard to believe that Ronald Reagan was a two-time, one of the more conservative, if not the most conservative, president we had.
Now, remember, Ronald Reagan was a Democrat before he became a Republican as well.
But he was governor. He was
governor as a Republican.
This was your granddaddy's Democratic Party back then, though.
Yeah.
So this wasn't.
Well, now, Richard Nixon, was he also governor?
Yes.
Was he? Hmm? He was governor of California. All right.
Yeah, he was governor.
And then he became vice president for Eisenhower.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was, Richard Nixon, I don't know that there have been any, other governors from California that have become?
When was the last time the
Republican was a Republican?
California? I guess it has to be in.
You mean in the Republican, in a presidential race?
Yeah. I'm
going to say Reagan probably. I don't know. Did Bush win? George W. Bush, win California?
No.
But then it would have been. Well, you got it on your screen.
I'm trying here. California went Republican.
Yeah. As we're doing our research.
Yeah.
in front of you, folks.
I want to. Well, anyway, as you look that up.
It's gonna go blue.
I think. Right. Oh, yeah. Republicans, as far as a presidential election today, are wasting their time and money investing anything in California because there's no shot in New York.
I can't find it this quickly.
Well, can you find anything on Kevin Bacon on there? Maybe who is what he's doing nowadays?
Last time California went Republican. Presidential.
The last century.
Yeah, see if you can get that. Is it comes up or no?
Nixon was not governor of California.
What was he in California?
He's in Congress.
He might have been. Yeah, I think he was in Congress.
Oh, Richard Nixon was not governor.
Yeah, California. Earl Warren was governor till.
I'm giving misinformation out. Somebody needs to cancel me.
Pat Brown, then Ronald Reagan, then Jerry Brown, then Duke Majan, Wilson, Davis, Schwarzenegger, Jerry Brown again, and now Gavin Newsom.
Well, my apologies. My history is usually right, but I got that one wrong. I thought Richard Milhouse.
Milhouse. He was in in Congress.
Okay, now good old Wikipedia has got it. So California, Democrat. I'm going backwards. George H.W. Bush in 1988.
He did
won California.
Okay.
Yeah, but after that, it's all been Democrat.
And, yes. And they have so they put rules in place that you have a lot of these jungle primaries now where it's the top.
In Los Angeles?
All over the state.
Ba-da-boom.
Yeah.
You see what I did there?
Yeah. All over the state. So what you have is instead of running a Republican against a Democrat, they just take the top three or two vote getters in any race and run them against each other. So a lot of times you have Democrat running against Democrat. Republicans don't even have anybody in the race. They are way outnumbered in the Assembly and in the Senate. They haven't had the governor's office in a while. They are essentially a permanent underdog mm-hmm. party in California.
And as I said, just as we started this conversation, it's only going to get worse because a lot of conservatives and Christians are leaving California because of the hostile nature of the state government against them.
It is a good petri dish, though, to see what's going to happen if you give in completely to the ultra-left, because that's what's ruling in California. And California, look at San Francisco, it's a mess right now.
I was reading a story the other day about, could you wonder about national politics? Well, really, politics, local and national, Ray. And the story was, we don't really have, it's kind of a misnomer to say we have blue states. What we have is blue cities.
Right.
Who run red states.
Right.
Uh-huh. Okay. You used to live in Illinois, Chicago. Right.
Yeah, Chicago. She's got deep blue and millions of people. You move downstate. The further away you get from Chicago, going down south, southern Illinois, the redder the state gets. So you have deep blue city, and it controls the rest of the state, even though there are hundreds of thousands of people in Illinois who are actually quite conservative. But how do you overcome the numbers right. in the city of Chicago?
By the way, that is the argument for the Electoral College, is that there's disproportionate amount of representation in large cities.
Well, they are people, and they
they each deserve a vote. But if you didn't have the Electoral College, and it was just a popular vote, if you go to five cities that have 3 million people in them, you know how many times?
Oh, you mean you're saying that was the original reason for the Electoral College?
Yeah,
to help balance things out between rural and
if you
city.
If you can hit 9 million yeah. people in three cities, do you know how many county fairs it would take to hit 9 million people? Why would you even bother?
Well, also take California for example, Los Angeles and San Francisco, the top two most populated areas, the Bay Area, the Los Angeles area, heavily blue. Mm-hmm. Well, but in the middle of the state there, you know, and some in Orange County and San Diego, there's red.
And
you know,
people California. Who vote.
So now that's why, if you want to know why Georgia is now considered a, quote, purple state or swing state, it's because the growth of Atlanta. And Atlanta's becoming like Chicago South, you know, in terms of their dominance over and their influencing state politics.
It's also, I think, a part of the issue in the change within Atlanta, Fulton County, et cetera. It's almost like what happened in Northern Virginia. Atlanta is becoming kind of an international city in terms of people moving there, either from other liberal bastions around the country, but also from other parts of the world. And when you get that, you lose some of the conservatism that typically marked Georgia.
You just gave another example. Virginia.
Yeah.
So Virginia is a red state with the exception of the hugely populated
Beltway.
Northern Virginia area, which is basically a suburbs of Washington, D.C. in a way. They vote heavily blue, and you got Richmond, maybe somewhere around Richmond. But other than that, it's a red state, and was traditionally so.
I got a question for you guys, any of the three of you. Why do Democrats gather together in blue states? Or in blue
cities?
Blue cities and Republicans.
All right, I read about this, too. I'm a well-read man. this is a theory. And Ed could probably back me up, having lived in the Boston area, but and Ray's lived in some big cities. A lot of your big cities, especially in the north and out west, they are very pro-union, all right? Heavily pro-union. And union folks vote for however their bosses that are their leaders tell them to vote, right? Basically, that they stick together as a block, and so they vote Democrat. The unions have always been hand in hand with the Democratic Party. Tell me if I'm saying something wrong here, and so that emanates out across a big city like New York or Boston or Chicago or Los Angeles, where your friends and your family, everybody knows you vote your self-interest. Your self-interest, and who doesn't? A lot of people vote their self-interest. It's not necessarily something inherently wrong with that, but they vote their self-interest being higher pay or whatever, because their union is going to get them that. Well, their union is going to get them that because they control the Democrat Party, which is the majority. You see how this works?
So the factories in the large cities, the workers are in the large cities, the unions are in the large cities.
Yes. Now, yes.
Universities. Now, the same thing goes with universities.
Now, one other addendum to that point, and you guys can feel free to see if you've outread me. one other point on that is that this explains why you may say, I just don't believe all those factory workers are all that flaming liberal. There's got to be some moderate to conservatives. I mean, there's a lot of, people who go to church and they're family people. They care about their communities. How could they be so socialistic or so liberal? Or maybe they're pro-life. They're pro-life, but when it comes to voting, they vote Democrat. Why do they vote Democrat? For the reasons I gave to you earlier, which takes preeminence over every other issue that might come along. Now, that changes from time to time. I mean, it's up to each individual, but by and large, you think I've got it there?
Well, I think it's certainly one of the factors. One of the things I also, what Steve said in terms of Boston, for example, a lot of colleges and universities. But also for cities like Cleveland, Detroit, Chicago, I was looking up to get some numbers here. The Great Migration, a lot of times people forget this from our history, but between 1910 and the 1970s, 6 million black people moved from the American South to big cities up north, one, to get away from Jim Crow laws down here, and two, to find jobs. A lot of black farmers had their farms taken from them through different bank policies, and so they couldn't support their families. So they all moved to these big cities. That's why there are huge black populations, percentage-wise, in these big cities, and they went there to get jobs, and then they worked in factories, like you're saying. A lot of them became union members. So that's why when you say, well, why are there so many black people in Detroit? For example, well, that's from that great migration. So there are a number of factors. The union factor is huge because a lot of these northern states especially had you had to belong to unions in certain occupations. And these factories and when you're making cars, all the automobile manufacturing plants, all heavily unionized, and the unions went Democrat.
But the same way with the black community, if you want to call it, quote, the black vote, okay, by that I mean they vote 90% Democrat. Black folks do. Well, why is that? I know they're not all that liberal. Huh? I know, you know what I'm saying? They're not as liberal as the party.
Yeah.
But yet they often end up voting for the party, the Democrats, because they have done that since the 60s.
Habit.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's because the Civil Rights Act that was, well,
that and
if they attribute that to
and all the social services that the Democrats promised them.
Right. Right. So that often override and the false caricature and stereotype, I think, of Republicans, i.e. the party of the rich white guy. You know what I'm saying? And you don't have half the country being rich white guys.
Right.
Half the country being the ones that half vote Republican, half vote Democrat, I'm saying. But it's the stereotype that is reinforced every election cycle. A lot of Hispanics traditionally are probably the most conservative on social and moral and family issues than any other ethnic group. And yet they still vote 60% Democrat, 40% Republican. Now they would probably, a lot of these folks would probably, if they could quote, push back against what I'm saying, they might say, well, yeah, because Republicans are cutting off welfare to poor people. That's not very Christian, Tim.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? This is the kind of response you would get back from people who would otherwise agree with us on maybe social issues.
Yeah.
So is that fair?
Yeah. No, people vote for complex reasons sometimes. Ray, I guess we can let you jump in too. They vote for complex issues, and probably most people vote first and foremost on the kitchen table and their pocketbook. Really, it's only been since the 80s where a lot of these social issues, well, in the late 70s with the Moral Majority, where social issues became so front and center for a lot of Christians. So a lot of people just voted on their economic self-interest. Ray, you know, it's complicated, I think.
I was thinking about the city of Chicago. Okay, for the better part of a century, the machine, the Democratic machine, which, Tim, you rightly said, is tied right in with the labor unions. In the city of Chicago, they have controlled the mayor's office. And I think about old man Daley. He was a terrific mayor by a lot of standards. I don't know that he could be elected today in Chicago because the Democratic Party nationally and in Chicago, they have just moved further and further and further to the left. Old man Daley was an old school Democrat, and you were talking about that a little bit ago. So is there a Republican Party in Chicago? Yeah. They have a few seats. Yeah. Is there a conceivable way in which a conservative Republican could win the mayorship of Chicago today? I don't think there's any conceivable way because the system itself is stacked. Well, it's controlled, Tim, by the Democrats. They control it. They make the rules.
You know, we all know that the MAGAs tried to start a movement there and tried to recruit Jesse Smollett. You know what I'm saying? To join them to start a MAGA chapter in Chicago.
That's MAGA country, baby.
It went bad. Yeah. We all know what happened there. It went bad there. But, you know, your big cities are for the foreseeable future, at least, they're going to remain Democrat. And I think the other thing is, as I mentioned here before, you know, you're talking about why people vote the way they do. Everybody has their reasons for why they vote for who they vote for. And in today's media-driven world, and with the internet out there and social media and everything like that, a lot of folks vote with their emotions. And, you know, at least that's a big factor in what do you agree with that? Or I think.
Yeah, I think that
that's not necessarily a bad thing. Again, altogether, right. We have emotions, but people vote for them, which override. I've interrupted you. I'm sorry. Believe me, I hear from our listeners.
Well, and that's why I think it's exactly right. And that's why a lot of campaign ads are emotionally driven. they're appealing to the emotions. So you see a lot of imagery. You will hear some words, but you have things flashing up on screen, and you're trying to speak. You're trying to speak to the emotions of the voter to try to get them to vote your way. And I think that's just part of the psychology of campaign ads proves that.
Yeah. Anything else to add to that, Ray? People voting with their feelings and emotions sometimes?
You know, in Chicago, they voted sometimes because, you know, he promised that my trash would get picked up on time, yeah, and nothing else really mattered, right?
Yeah.
And I voted three times.
Some of them in Chicago voted it because Darren Ballmer told her to vote.
That's exactly right.
Hey, before we get done, and we may have time to slip something humorous in, folks, we have neglected, yes, I said neglected to mention that this is National Truth for Youth Bible Week here on American Family Radio. We're asking you to help us give away thousands of free Bibles to young people across America. Now, you were talking about how to turn this country around. We want to begin with the gospel, and we want to begin with the power of God's word. So how do we get the Bible into the hands of high school students? Well, you know what? I can't walk in to a high school and hand out Bibles to students, but other students can. And that's what the National Truth for Youth Bible Week is all about. And so AFR has partnered with, Tim Todd on here on Monday, has partnered with, guys, help me out here. I can't remember the name of his ministry. Revival Fires Ministry. You guys aren't even paying attention. Revival Fires Ministry, Revival Fires International. We're partnering with Tim Todd. He produces these Bibles at his cost and will give them to any high school student who promises
or
to give
junior high.
Free or junior high who promises to give it to an unsaved student in your junior high or your high school. How do you get those? Parents, you're the ones probably listening. Grandparents, if you have teenagers who will do this, who will hand them out, you can get a free Bible, one free Bible for every kid you have in your home or grandparents in your grandkids' homes. And this is how you do it. You can call. This call will go right to Revival Fires Ministries. They have people waiting there to take these calls, 844-530-8890. That's 844-530-8890. Or you can go online anytime at tfy.org, tfy.org. That stands for Truth for Youth. And you can get a free Bible if you promise to give this away. You call between 8:30 a.m. and 4:30 p.m., 844-530-8890.
I have been paying attention to you, Ed,
the whole time.
But I think you should end with telling people about the Truth for Youth Bible Week.
Yes. And by the way, these Bibles are the New Testament with 100 pages of comics on a variety of important issues. And they are very well done. Kids will pay attention to these. And it's a way to get kids to read the Bible. So you can go to AFR.net and get more information on this very worthwhile project.
Thank you, Ray.
You bet. Thank you, Tim.
Appreciate Ed and Steve and Brent Quigley, our producer, and Christopher Woodward. Brad's away this week.
In Canada.
And the Canadian will be back Monday. He's gonna migrate south.
It's about time. When he goes away, things happen. So we want him back.
Trivia Friday tomorrow. We'll see you then.